Welcome back to the Mental Status Podcast. This is a podcast created by psychology students for psychology students. We are your hosts, Yash.
And I'm Josh.
We aim to demystify the unknowns of studying psychology and share our insights along the way. We would like to begin by acknowledging the traditional owners of the land in which we plan, write, and record this podcast, the Turrbal and Yuggera peoples. We pay our respects to elders, past and present, and we recognise that this has always been a place of teaching, learning, and storytelling.
In today's episode, we're getting stuck into a topic which has been more and more important than ever over the last few years, and that is surviving psychology with ADHD. Now, this episode is partly coming from my own personal experience, having been diagnosed with ADHD just before starting my psychology honours. But it's something which I had suspected that I'd had difficulties with for probably a lot longer going back. And it was only then that I kind of got a little bit of that closure and validation of why that is. And since then, I feel like I've learned an endless amount, whether it be explaining things from my past that may have been associated with ADHD, or just understanding myself better now than ever. And I think that's such a powerful thing and something I want to, if possible, shed some light on in this episode and maybe for someone else who's listening and going through the same journey. Now, as a bit of a disclaimer, this episode is not coming from a place of professional opinion, but purely from my own personal lived experience. And as well as that, simply my opinions on the ways that it either has or may impact studying and working in the psychology field. Now, many of the things we are discussing can be common experiences for many people, so don't feel too concerned if these sound a little too familiar to you. You should always consult professional opinion, professional assessment, and support if you have any questions about your own difficulties. That should definitely be your first port of call. But before we get into that, I think we should do our mental status. Do you want to go first?
No, you go first.
Okay. I am feeling very relaxed and rejuvenated. We've had a little bit of a break. It's on the back of already a pretty good few months. I think we've been ticking a few boxes in our lifestyle anyway, even if it's been fairly relaxing in the process. So I think that I'm in a pretty good place, and this is a bit of a big episode for me, I guess, or one that's a little bit more driven on my end of things. So I'm a bit nervous about how this will come out, but all in all, I feel in a good place. Yeah, it's a good time.
Nice. I'm also in a pretty good place. Like Josh was saying, we went away for Easter to Northern Rivers area, spent time with family, which was really nice. And it was funny. Something I like to do, because you know when you're at work and you come back from a break and everyone's like, oh, how was it? And then you say, good. And that's the end of it. Or, yeah, we just did this, blah, blah, blah. I find that you don't get an interesting answer. So I like to ask people, like, well, we were talking about what's either the highlight of your trip, but something I asked was, what was the best thing that you ate? And so, Josh, what was the best thing that you ate over your long weekend, long Easter weekend?
The safe answer is the granola that you made. But maybe a bit of a hot take or a random one. Some of the hot cross buns that we got. We got some like fresh hot cross buns from a bakery.
Josh is the biggest hot cross
bun. I'm a sucker for a hot cross bun.
He's such a snob about it. And yeah, he just goes through so many.
The red flag for hot cross buns, if you pick up the six pack and it's dense.
From like Woolies?
Well, from anywhere. If you pick it up and it's dense and heavy and you drop it and it's going to break your foot, no go. Stay away. You want to be picking up that bag and it feeling like a bag of feathers.
Yeah, that's the sentence of like, oh my God, this feels so light. I heard that so many times.
Green flag. That's what I'm looking for. So yeah, that's my strange answer.
Hmm.
What was the best thing you ate?
This is going to come as a shock, but it was a potato cake. The potato cakes that your parents
I don't understand. What's a potato cake?
Okay, whatever. Potato scallop. So I'm from Melbourne and we say potato cake and I think in Queensland you say scallop, potato scallop. Yeah, right. Anyways, it just reminded me of my childhood and it was so good. And so when I went to work, everyone was like, oh yeah, like this amazing roast or whatever, and they asked me and I was like, potato cake.
That would be a hard one to explain.
Yeah, but aside from food, I've been quite good. I've been enjoying my new job. You know, I have just been chilling a little bit. I finally got a new phone, guys. So I'm going to start posting and filming more TikToks.
Aussie psych student is back.
Yay. Oh, watch God. Out.
Wow.
But yeah, because my phone was broken, it was really annoying because half the screen was like unresponsive, so I couldn't type, hence why there were so many typos in all of my stuff. I just gave up and I was like, you guys get what I mean. But also I'm just terrible at spelling, so maybe that was just a cover up. But yeah, I got a new phone, so that's been good. And I don't know what else. But yeah, I feel like this has already been a chaotic mental status. I'm feeling chaotic right now. So.
Well, that's a good start for an ADHD episode. It's very on brand.
All right, why don't you start with the episode?
Okay. Well, to walk through, I suppose, the structure of this episode, we obviously know this is a huge topic and we're not going to be able to cover it all. But we're going to start the conversation and try to break the episode into a couple of main areas.
Mm-hmm.
One, which is studying psychology with ADHD. And two, which is working in psychology with ADHD. So for some of you, hopefully it gives some insight into where you're at now, but also some considerations for the future. And within each of these, I think what I'll try to do is talk about some of the main challenges. So sorry if this sounds like a bit of a negative episode. There are positives, but we're going to focus on what their obstacles and hurdles might be. And then after that, I'll try to give some of my personal suggestions for things which helped me and hopefully can help you to mitigate that and to go through the journey as manageably and smoothly as possible. So to begin with, the first and most notable challenge of having ADHD and studying psychology, and that is actually maintaining attention and concentration during your studies. So when I think of this one, I think the obvious example is things like classes, to be able to make sure that you're soaking up the content and consolidating and actually taking on board what you're hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it can be very easy to daydream, find yourself thinking about other things, distracted on your phone, on your laptop. There's a million things. And I think probably the most key example of this, when we started going online.
When was that?
So around COVID, I mean.
Okay.
Even shorter than lectures, they would do these like 20 or 30 minute videos breaking down the key topics, almost like a module. And I would take that and I would think 20 minute video, better than a 3 hour lecture, go and watch that. And I would watch 10 minutes and then I would have to go back 5 minutes because I hadn't been paying attention for the last five. So then I'd be at the 5 minute mark and watch another 10 minutes and I'd have to go back five. And so even though it's a 20 minute video, for me, trying to maintain that attention and concentration on it, it would take me 45 minutes to actually hear all of the content. And then that's one example of being in class, but all of a sudden you add that up and you put that on top of assignments across four different subjects, a whole semester, across multiple semesters, across a year. The time really adds up.
What kind of hours were you working during COVID, say on a day? Like what time would you wake up? What time would you finish?
During honours, which was 2021, still kind of the height of COVID, we still had lots of time off because of COVID. That was actually why I sought consultation,
right,
to see if I have ADHD.
Okay.
Because I developed a lot of compensatory, hopefully adaptive coping mechanisms throughout school, throughout uni. But all of a sudden, I was going into a period where I knew the workload was going to go up and me having difficulties paying attention could be the difference between 45 hours of work a week and 65 hours of work a week.
Right.
So that was one of the main challenges. And I think going hand in hand with that and the impact that it can have on assignments is procrastination. So one of those common things that we often hear with any student is that cycle of you get your assignment, you know, you have this whole task, 3,000 words, 2,000 words, all this research to do, 6 weeks of time to do it, but you go, whoa, this is a lot. Like, this is overwhelming. And so it gets put off a little bit. You don't really want to start. And that kind of keeps happening. You have a big task and the time gets smaller and smaller. You still don't want to do it. And then what ends up happening is you get, three days out? And the cram and the adrenaline and you do it in this absolute blitz in the last minute.
Yeah. And then it's not, you kind of crash after. It's kind of like a boom and bust situation.
Yeah. So you'll have like four of those a semester.
Yeah.
And I think these difficulties reflect another one of those challenges, which is directing those executive functions. Mm. So for people who don't know, I'm talking about your capacity to plan and organize and time manage all of your tasks.
Some people like to refer to executive functioning as like the CEO of your brain. It's like a...
There is often the misconception around it being seen as a deficit rather than it being seen as something which is difficult to regulate when you have ADHD.
It's like you have attention. It's just about trying to regulate it when you need it, if that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I actually think that one links pretty well with the last point that I've made here, which is that subsequent emotion dysregulation. So after going through the whole process, what do you feel? You feel stressed and you feel overwhelmed and you feel exhausted.
I have a question. Can you think of a time where you felt that emotion and can you describe it?
I mean, probably hundreds of times, but particularly during honours, I remember juggling thesis requirements, juggling deadlines, coursework, a lot of big tasks which had to be broken down and quite independently. And the feelings that came around that were just like these intense waves of, you know, real panic and feeling overwhelmed and like being in tears. And then getting on top of it and being like, all right, yep, head down, let's go.
Did you internalize a lot of stuff as well? Because there was pretty much no accommodations or allowances, really. You just had to get it done, doesn't matter how. And so because it being really stressful and whatnot, did you internalize a lot of those feelings?
Well, when I talk about being so overwhelmed, I remember particularly feeling like it was about me and going like, well, why can't I do this?
Mm.
Why do I find this so hard when everyone else can do this? So I remember that being very visceral for me. And that's after I had my diagnosis.
Mm.
So that's after I knew that I had ADHD and should have, not should have, but could have been capable of externalizing it. But I think those ingrained perceptions and beliefs from like my whole life, yeah, they run deep.
Hard to unlearn.
And so in those moments of intense dysregulation, or when you're just feeling super overwhelmed, like honors can kind of bring out of you. Yeah, I think that really opened up some of those wounds.
Do you compare yourself to others, or for example, me?
I can remember times where I'd be studying with friends in undergrad and we would be in the same environment studying next to each other and I'd be wondering how they were still going. And comparing to you is kind of a harsh comparison because I think you're so far on the upper end of the spectrum for some of these things, like executive functioning.
Yeah.
But it's quite ironic too because you know what my thesis was on?
What?
Social comparison.
Oh, true. And did you kind of silently, like I could imagine being in a study group in the library and you're just seeing all these people and then you're silently thinking like, oh, how are they going? And then it just snowballs and you get more frustrated at yourself and then...
I feel like, again, because I was at home a lot, I had this sense of I would go home and spend 8 hours on what other people would spend 3.5 hours on.
Mm.
And then I would come back into class and pretend that I didn't just do that and that I did it just as well as anyone else, so that it was, yeah, not such an overwhelming mess.
Kind of mask that.
Yeah, that's a good word for it, actually.
Mm.
You can imagine, though, had I not been diagnosed or had I not realized that I had these difficulties, how easily you would internalize that in terms of your self-worth and in terms of
your... It's a very common thing right out here with ADHD.
It is. It's really, really common. But there are things which definitely helped. Okay. Things which I found either in the process or as a result.
Let's hear about it.
Well, the first one I've told you about endlessly, which is finding your own working style. So you talked about the social comparison.
Right.
That's exactly why I would follow what everyone else was around me and what they were doing.
Mm.
So when people would sit down in class and be able to pay attention for 50 minutes, no concern, taking notes, 2 pages of beautiful notes... And I would try and do the same thing, and it wouldn't work.
You're trying to make them pretty. I've seen Josh's art as a child. It was horrible. Little sidebar. Like, whenever they do art in primary school, all of his art is just one scribble, like the same scribble, because it was the rule was no art, no play type situation. So you had to do your art before you could go and play. So it was all, like, the same scribble. So Josh's parents have pages and pages of the exact same scribble.
And it probably wouldn't have got better in high school. But I'm choosing to externalize that as an ADHD difficulty and not...
You just want to go outside and play and kick the ball around.
Just let me run.
Yeah. All right, go on, sorry.
For me, what I found helped my ADHD was only studying an environment that I actually knew that I could focus. And it meant that I might be doing shorter bursts of intense studying rather than sitting down and doing a timer for 90 minutes. I used to watch those, like, study with me 2-hour videos. And I mean, that's terrible for comparison. But then when I would have periods of going, okay, I will do 2 lectures here. And or like I will go through 2 lecture slides and it might take me 25 minutes
mm-hmm.
of intent attention, I was able to soak up a lot more. So finding what works for you is probably one of the main things which made a big difference, and not just conforming to what people say, oh, you should be taking notes and you should be sitting down for 90 minutes and then having 10 minutes
yeah,
off.
Yeah, I think half of it is like sometimes I would feel like if I didn't do a solid block of like 3 hours of work that I wasn't doing... that I wasn't studying, but studying can look like so many different things.
Yeah, exactly.
And just shaking yourself of that rigid definition of what studying is and what hard work is, it's probably quite helpful.
Mm. And contrary to that description that we talked of attention deficit, in reality, it's more about the regulation of your attention, being able to direct it towards your studies.
Mm.
So for me, it was about finding that approach to studying where I was actually able to direct my attention to it more effectively.
It's actually really nice to see. This is kind of following into workplace hours and patterns, because now people are understanding that, you know, actually flexible start and finish times are beneficial, because some people prefer to do their work in the morning or like to take a bigger break and then do it in the afternoon or fit it into a shorter period of time. So I think people are starting to catch up that not everything has to be 9 to 5, structured blocks, like beautiful chunks. You know what I mean? Like the world doesn't work like that and people don't work like that. So I think it's slowly starting to change a bit.
Oh, I agree completely. And I hope that it comes across that I'm saying that that's what worked for me. But for someone else, it might be, oh, I would rather do 1 3-hour block where I use all of like my effort and try to get as much in, rather than try to drag it out over 6 hours in lots of little bursts. It can be completely different. That's really might be what works for you. But in terms of adapting your work environment and your work style, we might end up coming back to that one.
Oh, cool.
Some of the other ones that I had was remembering that ADHD can sometimes be considered somewhat of a mood disorder rather than simply attention. And so what I mean is, you know, when we talk about that assignment before and you have this whole task ahead of you and you've got 6 weeks to do it, the thing that stops you from doing it is the fact that it seems so overwhelming. It seems so distressing, the idea of having to make a start and where do you even begin. That can be the thing that stops you. With ADHD, if you don't have that dopamine in your brain, you're not going to want to engage in that task. You don't have that same baseline. So having that mindset and utilizing some of those emotion regulation tools, so mindfulness or
what do you use personally?
Chunking is a big one.
Okay.
So I think that that's a huge thing for starting when you look at any assignment. I might not want to start and I might not have any interest in doing all the research that's involved.
How do you chunk though? Say you got an assignment to write a lab report, like what would you do?
Well, I don't actually... In terms of making a start, I'm not talking about laying out every single step.
Okay.
But I'll kind of go, all right, what is a digestible and approachable step right now? Because
the
barrier to entry of reading a couple of articles is much smaller than doing all of my research to write this report.
Mm-hmm.
One of the last ones that I want to touch on is, I suppose, addressing some of the difficulties with executive function. And it kind of ties into the first tip on finding what works for you. But it's taking the time to establish an organization system that works for you. And I have a specific example of this. You know, you often see people talk about my Notion pages set up with all of my life goals and my task management. I have a Google Calendar with reminders set up.
Are you just talking about me?
This is very direct. But for some people, that might not be the most viable thing. Sure, if you can get it set up and it works for you, great. And for a lot of people, that might be the case. But you know one of the best things that I actually ever did for my organization? was I got one of these A3 poster with all of the weeks of the semester just on one page. And so I put that above my desk and I wrote in when each of the like assignments were due or when the big exams are. And so I could visually see where I was at and how many weeks, how many days until the next assignment and the space between them. I know that's so like tactile and it's not the most up-to-date thing, but that external cue, and in a really simplistic and quite minimalistic way, yeah, I found that really manageable and actually made a massive difference to my, yeah, to my academic grades.
I think you're on the money with having just a snapshot of the entire semester, because Google Calendars are great. And yes, you can click on like the semester, I mean the monthly or the bi-monthly view or whatever, but it's still not a snapshot of your entire like academic calendar, I think. So just having that in front of you was probably what really helped, I think, like the entire thing.
Yeah. And for someone else, you might find the Google Calendar. I'm sure there are people with ADHD going, my Google Calendar is my savior. That's great. That's what works for you. But yeah, if it isn't, then make sure you find something which sort of suits your needs. I really liked having a calendar which said week 7, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Week 8, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. So that's just a little thought on studying psychology, the things that I struggled with, the things that I think are pretty common to struggle with if you have these difficulties, but also the things which made probably the biggest difference to being able to get through the very long journey of studying in psych. But on the flip side of things, there's working in psychology.
So can you set the scene as to what a psychology work environment would entail, like very generally?
Okay, so let's see. We've got the first thing that comes to mind would be the time you spend with clients.
Big part. Big part of the job.
Some would say the main part. But then on top of that, you have paperwork, lots of paperwork. So whether that is, you know, initial intakes to get the background, your case notes from the sessions, correspondence with GPs, correspondence with other healthcare providers.
Referrals.
Yeah, exactly.
So much. What proportion?
Supervision.
True. Supervision notes.
Working with other health professionals.
The list just keeps going.
Yeah. It looks different, I guess, for so many, like for different psychology roles.
True. What proportion do you think you spend doing client stuff versus report writing? Do you reckon it's like 50-50?
So client versus paperwork?
Yeah. It's kind of hard to...
It is hard, and it would be different for a lot. But
probably differs on the day as well, true.
For me, I don't know, probably 75-80% maybe with clients. Probably a little bit, probably a bit less. 70% client, 30% paperwork.
Yeah, when I was in a role and I was doing heaps of reports, that took so much more time. So I guess it really depends on where you're at.
Whereas I'm not doing psychometric assessments at the moment.
That's true.
So yeah, but that is a good point that it can differ depending on what sort of area of psychology you're in.
So maybe that's something to consider.
Oh, it is. And once again, that could be something we come back to.
Okay. Damn it. I've not seen what Josh is like prepared for this, so I feel like I'm...
She's just very intuitive though with all this.
Exposing your...
No, this is really, really good. But yes, so you can imagine the executive functioning requirements that would be involved considering all of the paperwork that could be involved. So yeah, whether you are dealing with the administration side of things, correspondence, making sure you're on top of all the intakes and session content. Yeah, it can be very easy, I think, to let those things slip or let GP letters slip. So it takes a degree of demand, much like, I suppose, the academic side. But maybe now we should tackle what might be one of the big questions for a lot of people.
I think it's important to.
Yeah, and that question is around maintaining attention and concentration. So I could absolutely understand whether you have ADHD and you haven't had much experience in a therapy setting, or even if you're thinking about attending therapy and wondering about the attention of your own therapist and wanting to make sure you're getting the most support, which is super valid and understanding, because it's a critical requirement in a lot of ways to make sure that you're paying attention to the content, the cues that might be going on, all of the nuances that can occur in the therapy session. But I want to address from my personal lived experience that I actually find this not to be an issue at all. I find therapy to be some of the most engaging work that I do.
Mm.
It's where I enter that flow state. It's where I find I can actually be quite hyper-focused and, yeah, really extremely engaged in everything that's going on to try to pick up. And that might be different for different people, but I know that it's some of the most rewarding part of the work.
A lot of my friends who are also psychologists with ADHD echo the same kind of things as well.
You know, I've been studying psychology and I've done assignments and I've done lectures and I've done things where I've felt my attention just drifting off and my mind painfully struggle to focus. But I don't have that issue during therapy. I find myself, yeah, honestly quite fixated during those sessions. Quite attuned
to what someone's saying.
I hope so.
Yeah.
At least definitely in that flow state.
You definitely are to me as well when I'm kind of talking or saying something. I think that's actually your strength. Yeah.
Yeah, there's something about it when you're with someone. And there might be different settings that might, you know, for one person, you know, in-person psychology might be super engaging and they might struggle with, like, telehealth.
Yeah, that's
and struggle to pay attention. Someone else might absolutely excel in telehealth and they really prefer that setting or they do quite well in that setting.
Mm.
So it all can depend. But yeah, I suppose coming from this and coming from that hyper-focus that you can get, there is another challenge, though, that you can face, which is the effects on your cognitive load.
Mm.
So if you're spending however many hours of the day hyper-focused and paying super close attention and genuinely enjoying it too, that's brilliant. But the downside is that at the end of that day, you can come home
and lie on the floor
for like splat, absolutely exhausted.
Josh has like messaged me and he's like, I'm on the floor.
I'm like, I can't get up. And that's not, I'm not saying that in a scary way, but just, yeah, the exhaustion that can come at the end of the day. I'm not talking about burnout necessarily here, though, of course, that is something to consider.
Mm.
But just generally, that exhaustion that you can feel from putting so much cognitive effort in. And it makes sense, because if you've ever seen any of the research around, well, one, how much your brain burns in terms of calories.
True, yeah.
It's like a quarter of your daily energy expenditure.
Right.
And like chess players can burn like silly, like ridiculous amounts of energy and calories.
And you're probably not eating during those like bouts of like effort as well. So, you know, like replenishing.
No, well, that's probably not a bad tip to put at the end.
Yeah.
Making sure you're on top of those things.
Yeah.
But it's something to keep in mind is that it does have a bit of an expense there where it might deplete your cognitive load a little bit and you might need to find ways to be able to recharge that.
Hmm.
And then finally, as a result of some of those challenges, as a result of the depleted cognitive load, is the emotional load. So obviously, with the emotion regulation, some of the content that you might be working with, whether it's through compassion fatigue or vicarious trauma, managing your emotional well-being, and as I said, managing burnout. So that's, I suppose, the wider level of going, hey, if I'm not restoring that cognitive load, if I'm not sleeping, which helps a lot, if I'm not eating
Sleep's another issue, isn't it?
Yeah.
But, you know.
Can of worms. Yeah, we can't cover it all.
Yeah.
But if you're not doing those little things over the wider level, that's when that emotional burnout, just general burnout, starts to take place.
Great. So do you have any kind of tips based on those challenges and struggles?
Yeah. So I suppose this is for down the line for a lot of people listening. First of all, coming back to what we said before, is about considering what sort of environment works for you. So whether that is working in an environment where you might have more organizational support, you have a great administrative team there, and they can help you make sure that you're on top of these things.
I know some people choose to do like 4 clients over 5 days and other people choose to do 6 clients over 3 days so they can have 2 days to kind of, you know, decompress a bit. So I guess it's up to you, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. That's actually my next tip.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry.
No, that's perfect. So being strategic about how you break up your week. So for some people, exactly like you said, you could do better off managing your days very well and having a couple of clients a day and doing it across 5 days.
Awesome.
Someone else might go, you know what? I am really good during the day, but I find that by the third or fourth day, I really struggle. So maybe I'm better off doing 5 clients instead of 4 and doing it over 3 days.
Mm.
Might differ.
And I think psychology is good in that way, that you can kind of be more flexible with your time as opposed to like structured 9 to 5. Like there's more flexibility, do you think?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And that can work in your favor because you can capitalize on one. So let's say, yeah, you work well with momentum. So on those days that you're working, you want to stay engaged. You want to keep working and you want to be able to provide support. Or you might go, well, I would benefit more from having less clients a day, even if that means working 5 days a week,
gotcha.
That sort of thing. So that might come back to how you recharge your battery.
Speaking of recharging.
Yeah. So exactly like we just said, prioritizing the recovery.
So what do you do to prioritize your recovery?
Honestly, I think sleep is a really good example. For me at least, yeah, I notice a massive difference on the days where I get a good sleep.
Weird flex here, but I'm actually a really good sleeper.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I've compared to like all my friends and family and everything, I think I'm like you're the best.
Just out like a light.
Yeah.
It's like when you hit the bed, you are gone until 7 a.m.
Yeah.
Whenever you're waking up. It's a superpower. It actually is though.
Yeah, it really is. I took it for granted, and the more I talk to people, I'm like, oh.
You're like, I don't have those issues.
Yeah. All right, go on.
Yeah, but for me, sleep, on a one-to-one basis, if I have a bad night's sleep, I notice my next day is bad. If I have a good night's sleep, I notice the next day is good. Exercise gives me a really good foundation if I'm getting that in. If I'm on top of eating, so kind of like you said, I mean, if you're not eating during the day, you probably do need to actually replenish sort of the energy stores for your brain so that you can pay attention. Yeah, there's some of the big ones, but even again, on a wider level, having that emotional supports in some way or another, both personal, both external in your support network, they're the kinds of things that you might have been able to grit your teeth and not really rely upon. I know I didn't really need too much of that during, you know, my undergrad or during my honours.
Mm-hmm.
But this is going to be your lifestyle. And if you don't engage in those things now, then it's going to accumulate, and that's when you start to, you know, you don't want to have to haphazardly go, oh, quick, I need to talk to someone, when you're already well down the line of burnout.
Hmm.
So
that's getting, a good point.
Getting the lifestyle things in place so that you can manage ongoing.
I think that was a great episode, Josh, and thanks for sharing and being very vulnerable.
Hopefully no one's sick of my voice now.
Letting, yeah. Well, I have a solo episode next week, I think.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one. That's going to be good.
So, I have to plan it.
But I do just want to put out there, yeah, I've focused a lot on the challenges of ADHD, and I recognize that that is not all that this is. It can sound very negative when I talk about it this way, but it's not a bad thing. It's obviously unique. It's a difference. It has its challenges, absolutely. But we're only focusing on these things because they're the sorts of things that you might want support with. They're the sort of things that you may want to make some sort of reasonable adjustments to be able to manage in your studies and in your work.
Mm.
So that's the reason that we're focused on this. Hopefully no one's spiraling with ADHD listening to this.
Yeah, I think it's nice to also validate, yeah, there are some things that are challenging, but I like how you provided some ways that have helped you and hopefully it can help other people, but, you know.
Yeah, I'd be interested for us to put out like a question box on this one.
Yeah, what helps other people so we can like share our knowledge and
so maybe we should do that when this episode goes up. So if you're looking for more ideas for how to manage ADHD, we'll try and share some of the best responses if we get some good ones.
Follow us at Mental Status Podcast. Again, I have a new phone, so I will be posting more.
And our email, mentalstatuspodcast@gmail.com. If you want to email us with any questions or inquiries, tutoring, whatever it might be.
But yes, thank you so much for your time, everyone, and we'll see you next time.
All right, see you guys.
Bye.